There is a lot of authors in this paper, and several of them are here. I'd like to highlight and recognize two of them who did a lot of the heavy lifting when it came to the implementation of remote regions, and that is Irina Kaosio and Stanko Novakovic. And those two folks are not here right now because they are in the office right now working in our next submission. And my clicker isn't working. Let's see. Okay, so this slide shows the ratio of network to memory latency over the past 20, 21 years. And notice that the y-axis is a log scale. And this is for a local area network and a commodity memory. And you can see that that ratio has been going down steadily over time. And the reason for that is because networks are getting faster and faster. And also, memory over the past 10 years or so has not been getting faster. So memory has been getting more dense, and you're getting more bandwidth to memory, but it's not getting faster. So latency to memory in the past 10 years has been about 100 nanoseconds. And now we have networks that operate with a latency of about 1 microsecond. And so the ratio now is around 10, right? And we can expect in the future that ratio will shrink even more when we get memory such as like 3D XPoint that's gonna be slower than DRAM by a factor of perhaps 3. And so that thing is gonna approach, the ratio is gonna approach 1 with time. And that leads to the idea of remote memory, which is one host using the memory of another host as if it were its own memory. When it runs out of memory, it can borrow memory from other hosts in the network. And there are a lot of people working on remote memory right now. We made a very good case for it in a SOC paper last year, and there is a lot of details. There's a lot of problems that need to be solved for remote memory to be successful. But one of the challenges in using remote memory is that the interface that remote memory provides is problematic. And that interface is called libibverbs. And that interface has two problems. The first problem is that it's dependent on the technology that you use to access the remote memory. And currently, that technology mostly is RDMA. But there are other technologies that are coming up in the future, such as GEMZ and OmniPath. And if you develop one application for RDMA, then it may not work in the future technologies, and so you have to kind of develop them again. But perhaps the biggest problem is that the RDMA interface to remote memory is extremely complicated. And to get a sense, suppose that I just have a very simple task where we have two hosts, and the first host writes some data into its local memory, let's say hello world, and would like to have the second host remotely read the memory of the first host to get back the hello world. So this is, you can imagine that the simplest task that you can imagine that involves remote memory. And the question is, how would you do that using the current interface? And the answer is that it is extremely complicated. You have to go to a ritual of many different things. For example, you have to initialize context in both the first and the second host. You have to register memory in the first host, say this is memory that's gonna be exported to the rest of the system. And you have to establish a connection between the two, and you have to create a queue pair in the second host, and the queue pair will be used to issue commands. You have to associate the queue pair with a connection, and then you have to post a verb into the queue pair saying, I want to read, and then you have to monitor for the completion of the request in another queue pair, and so forth. So it's extremely complicated to do that very simple task. And to get an idea, this is the code that does this written in C++. And you don't need to go into details, so this is a very small font. But you can see there's all kinds of structs and data structures that you have to deal with in a lot of function calls. And this is not the entire code. In fact, there is more. So there is that, there is that, there is that. And you just keep going, right? And so this is the entire thing in 3-point font. And there's only two types of people that can manage doing that, right? The first type of people are the experts in RDMA. These are the people that have learned RDMA like a foreign language. and have people like Miguel Castro or Haibo Chen or Patrick Sweaty, right? And those folks really have spent a lot of time to understand RDMA, and they can talk RDMA. And the second type of people that can do this are people like me, the masochists. And when I was in college, I was learning about TCP, and I thought, okay, this is a really convoluted interface, right? So you have to create a socket, you have to bind to a socket, and you have to listen to a connection, and you have to accept the connection. And even when you're defining addresses using the socket interface, you have to create a socket DDR in, and then you have to cast this to a struct socket DDR. So I thought that stuff was so painful, right? And here, what you have with RDMA is even better, right? This is like 10 times more complicated and 10 times more work to do that stuff. So this is the problem that we are trying to address in this work, and we want to find a much better interface for using remote memory that will be portable across future technologies, and it'll be much simpler to use. So this is our contribution to do exactly the same task that I mentioned to you before. And the basic idea of our interface is to use a well-known idea that Unix proposes, that everything is a file. So what's happening here is that we're creating a new file system where a file represents a chunk of memory of a given process in a given host. And so you can see here that I'm first creating one of such files inside our region file system, and I'm allocating space within that region, which is going to be a chunk of memory in the first host, and then I'm just writing hello world to that location. And this allows you to distinguish between memory that are going to be allowing other people to use and memory that is private to you. So if you want memory that is private to you, you just use regular malloc. And if you want memory that other people will be able to access, then you create a region and you allocate space inside that region. And the second host can just open that region and notice that has the same name and read data from there. And that read will translate into an RDMA read operation that behind the scenes will do all the other stuff that you saw in the previous slide. But this is perhaps you agree, it's a much simpler interface. Okay, I mentioned this already, so the basic idea is that a region is a file that represents a chunk of memory, and there's a special file system which is shared across the cluster, and it's mounted in a certain place, let's say slash regions, and that operations of that file system will translate into RDMA operations. So why do we choose a file for the interface to remote memory? And there are many reasons, like files are well known. You learn this in a basic course when you're in college. Files also have a very convenient feature, which is a namespace, and you can use this to organize your data. And this is something which RDMA doesn't have, right? You can just establish connections to where you want to read the memory from, and there is no way to organize, okay, if I want to get this type of data, where should I go find it? So you have to do this yourself in the application. Whereas if you have a file system, then you can kind of organize this. You don't need to know exactly where to go. You can just have directories inside the region file system, and then the appropriate parties go and create regions there and then read from regions there. There are many utilities that already exist for dealing with files. For example, with regions, you can just start off Emacs, and you can use Emacs to open the memory of another process, and you can just edit that and save it, right? There are also utilities for doing backup, for example, or for doing virus scan. So I can virus scan the memory of a remote process just by using those standard utilities, like or backup and so forth. And so by providing an interface through a standard file system, we can leverage all these utilities. So I can do grep, I can do awk in the memory of other processes. So this is kind of cool. There's also language support. Pretty much every Turing complete language has support for files. And if we provide a file system now, that language will be able to use regions just by accessing those files. Also, if you do something in the file system interface, you have support for interposition that allows you to profile and to log accesses to the file system, and this could be useful for debugging. And finally, file systems provide standard mechanisms for you to define who owns what and who has access to what. And this is something which is not provided using RDMA. So this is why we chose files. There are many design considerations when you go and you think carefully about what that interface should look like. And I'm going to go through some of them here. The paper has more. And one important consideration is that of persistence of data. So if I create a region and I'm a process, and I write some data there, and then I terminate, there might be other processes in the system that still want to see that data. But if I terminate, my memory gets deallocated, and the contents go away. And so we do have an option for you to create a region that remains even after the process has terminated. And under the hood, this is what's happening here, is that that region gets allocated by a different process, and that different process hands over the memory to the main process. And so even if the main process goes away, the chunk of memory remains there for the other host to use. So this is a flag that you can specify, which provides persistence. Otherwise, if you don't specify the flag, once the process terminates, the region disappears, and any attempt to access that region will cause an I/O error. And this is, if you are using RDMA, for example, the behavior would be similar, right? So you'd be dropping the connection to the remote process, and you wouldn't be able to read from the memory or write to the memory of that process anymore. The other thing we wanted to provide is memory mapping, right? So we want to be able to open a region and just memory map that. And once you memory map that region remotely, you can just access the data as if it were local. And this is done through the usual page faulting mechanism, right? So you memory map the remote file, and you try to access a location. And if it's not present, it causes a page fault. You fetch the data over the network. And now you can access the data. If you try to modify the data, the buffer is marked, or the page is marked dirty. And then eventually, in the background, that page gets flushed back to where it was. One of the things that we decided to do with memory mapping is to provide a fixed virtual address every time that a process maps a given region. And so if I create a region in host 1 and I get a certain virtual address V1, and I go to host 2 and I open the same region, I'm going to get exactly the same virtual address. And the reason for that choice is so that if you store pointers inside regions, then those pointers will remain valid even if you're trying to access that pointer from the other host. And so this is useful for keeping data structures without having to do the pointer translations. Now, once you do memory mapping and once you do page faults, then there are concerns about performance. It takes a long time for you to handle page faults. And so we provide functions that allow you to prefetch data so that when you try to access memory mapped data, the data will already be present, so you will not have to take the cost of a page fault, which can be significant if you're talking about microsecond scale performance. There's a question of cache coherence. So remote memory kind of looks like distributed shared memory, and distributed shared memory tends to have some form of cache coherence. And we decided not to provide cache coherence here, but instead provide functions that allow the application to get coherence at moments when they want to have coherence. And what that means is functions that allow you to flush dirty data that you have in your cache, and functions that allow you to clear your cache so that when you try to read it, you get the freshest possible data. And the applications can use those functions at the moments in which they want to be able to get fresh data or flush the dirty data. And this leads to a notion of sharing data in remote memory in a fairly coarse way. And when I say coarse, I mean coarse in two dimensions, in both space and time. So with traditional shared memory, you have very fine-grained sharing. So you can imagine you have multiple threads accessing the same memory. These threads might be running a mutual exclusion algorithm where they are trying to access exactly the same variable, and they have memory barriers, and they're trying to synchronize that. And if you try to do this over remote memory, that's going to be extremely inefficient. So we don't see that form of sharing, which is very fine grain, both in terms of space, small locations, and time, doing this back and forth between the threads. We don't see that as working well with remote memory, but instead, we find that there are coarse grain sharing where one host writes a lot of data, and after a while, maybe like after a few seconds, another host can go and start reading that data. And you can imagine that happening, for example, in a map-reduced computation. So the mapper produces a lot of data, and it takes a few seconds to do that, and once it's done, it's done. Now, the reducer can start reading that data from a separate host in a subsequent phase. And this is coarse grain in terms of space, because it's a big chunk of data, and in terms of time, because it's not happening every instruction that you're switching between these two users of memory. OK, so these were some of the design interface considerations when it comes to the interface. And now I'm going to talk briefly about how we implemented that interface on top of RDMA. And we expect in the future that once we have other technologies for remote memory, like the Gen Z, there will be different implementations that will keep the same interface. And this is what the implementation looks like. So there's a bunch of hosts that would like to use remote regions and applications that are running inside those hosts. And our implementation uses a control plane that consists of a manager, which is currently just one host in the system, though you could imagine making that a distributed system for scalability. And the manager is going to be responsible for allocating virtual addresses. Remember that I told you when you create a region, you get the same virtual address no matter where you are in the system. If you open the region from a different host, you get the same virtual address. That means you need to have a centralized place to allocate those virtual addresses, and the manager does that. Also, the manager will be able to know which host has how much space in their memory so that when you create certain regions, then you might want to create those regions using the space of a separate host on your own because you may not have space locally. And finally, the manager has a region list here, which you can think of as being the metadata in a file system. So this is the list of inodes with the attributes of the inodes, like who is the owner, the access permissions, and so forth. And it also has a map that tells you for each offset of the inode where it's located in the memory of which host and which offset within that memory. So the manager, in some ways, works almost like a daemon for a distributed file system, except that it does not hold the data of the files itself. The data of the files are kept in a set of pools that are running inside the application host. And so if this application process were to create a region, it would go to the manager to check whether that region as a file exists, and if it doesn't exist, the manager will create an inode for it, but the space will be allocated in a pool of memory that is in the application host. And that pool of memory is logically associated with a daemon process. And the reason it's associated with a daemon process is so that if the application process goes away and you want to have persistence, then the data remains there. So the daemon process does not go away. And so you can see that this design is essentially a design of a file system that is separating data, the control path from the data path, and the data path is going between hosts, and it's using the RDMA protocol. And for the control, we just go to the manager like you would go if you're using NFS. I'm going to briefly talk about the evaluation. And here we have a simple test bed with ConnectX 4 and 100 gigabits per second networking. And I'm going to compare regions or remote regions with three baselines, RDMA, using just a remote, just a local RAM disk, and using a RAM disk over NFS. Now, using a local RAM disk does not allow you to share data between processes in different hosts, but you can share data between processes in the same host using an interface which is very similar to regions. NFS with a RAM disk would allow you to share memory between processes in different hosts, but the memory is living inside the NFS server, so there's some performance cost of doing that. And this is the basic performance that you get, and you can see that the plus line, which is in purple, is RDMA, is one of the best, which is close to TempFS. And this is reads and this is writes, and this is the number of bytes that we're trying to transfer. And this is the latency. And actually, each one of these transfers was repeated 100 times. This is an average. And you can see that the latency for regions is about half an order of magnitude worse than that of RDMA, which is a bit disappointing. And what's happening here is that the overheads of the file system are getting into play here. However, this is the performance without caching. And regions is paying a cost, right? If you try to read, let's say, 2 to the 8 bytes, 256 bytes in regions, it's actually, because of the file system, it's going to read an entire page. It's going to read 4 kilobytes of data. And that creates an overhead, because it's only going to use 256 bytes. So if I can show you another graph where we do have caching. So once you read a page, subsequent accesses will be hitting that cache until you finish reading those things and you need to read the next page. You can see that now the performance of regions has improved dramatically. And notice that this was a log scale, and the other graph was based on 10 to the 1, and this graph is based on 10 to the minus 1. So we got a much better performance here. Also, it's pretty obvious that if you use regions instead of RDMA, your code complexity shrinks a lot, right? So we implemented two applications, and I'm not going to talk much about that here, but it was fairly easy to port them to use regions because it's a file-based interface. And with that, I'm out of time. So I'd like just to conclude by saying that in this work, we're trying to propose a simpler interface to remote memory, which is called remote regions. And that interface arises from applying a very simple idea from Unix, which is everything is a file. And we believe that interface is intuitive, and it will allow remote memory to be popularized and used by more people in the future. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Hi, Sudarshan Viswanathan. That was a great talk. So I had a question, like how frequently do the host and the manager, how frequently do they have to communicate? Was it for every read and write operation?
Yeah, no. So the data path does not involve the manager. When you open a region in the host, you download from the manager a map that tells you where to find your data. And you have that as part of your library. And so there's a client library for using regions that I didn't talk about. But from that library, from that information now, whenever you need to read or write data, then you can just go directly to the place where the data belongs. If you were to create new regions or delete regions and so forth, then you go to the manager. So for the metadata operations, you go to the manager. For the data operations, you can go directly to where the data is for both reading and writing that.
So if you, let's say you write some data to a region, right?
Yes.
So you have to increment the inode representing that region.
Yes, yes.
And that inode would be maintained in your manager.
Yeah, right? If you're extending the region, right? Because let's say that you're appending, then you have to eventually tell the manager that has happened so that you can fix the file size. You also have to eventually fix the timestamps of modification times and so forth. And if you're extending so much, you may need to actually allocate more space for this. And so when that happens, you have to go back to the manager. If you're just doing modifications of data which does not extend the file size, then you don't have to do this. And so, but and those things tend to be more frequent, right? And the cases when you're extending the file, then it happens less often.
Thanks.
Maybe let's take like two more questions because we are already.
Hi, Keith Smith from NetApp. I also enjoyed the talk. I'm looking forward to reading the paper. Early in your presentation, you alluded briefly to 3D crosspoint, and that made me wonder sort of as non-volatile memory becomes more widely available, if I wanted to do sort of remote access to non-volatile memory so I had things that could persist much longer than your model is, do you feel like your notion of remote regions here would be a useful thing in that space too?
Okay, so I missed one word I said. If you're trying to access remotely 3D crosspoint, then what about persist?
Well, more generally, trying to remotely access non-volatile memory. So in that case, the names you're creating for regions might last much longer. Potentially, you could be using it essentially as a real file system. So it lasts for days, months, years. And is there any reason that would cause problems for your remote regions?
Yeah, well, we do support the persistence so that the data remains even if the process goes away. I can see perhaps there will be a memory management problem. The question is, where should the data be? And when you're creating a region, that data is local, and maybe locally you have run out of space and you would prefer that data to be somewhere else. And if you were to have a distributed file system to manage that memory, then the distributed file system would be able to use its intelligence to decide where the data would be and thereby do a better job at memory management than we currently do at regions. On the other hand, you can imagine extending regions so that when you create a region, instead of using the local memory to do this, you can go to the manager and ask the manager, where should this be placed, and address the problem of placement. But to be honest, the distinction between a storage system and local memory or memory starts to get blurred once you get to storage class memory like 3D cross points. And so the distinction between a real file system and regions also starts to become kind of blurred, right?
Thank you.
I'm Sung Woo Son, UMass Lowell. I was thinking if there is a mechanism to provide a kind of window for maintaining persistency, maybe it might be much easier for certain developers who need a more fine-grained control of their data. Have you thought about that kind of interface?
So, and what would that window achieve? This is a window of time, you're saying?
For certain time of window. Data is, I can guarantee that the data is persistent at that point. So the remote side, the application side know that it's kind of mutual agreement between remote and the client.
Yeah, so that could be done. We don't do that. So instead of doing the window, we allow the application to periodically go and checkpoint, flush the dirty data. And presumably, if you had a window, that would be happening periodically, right? At the end of your window, you go and you flush your dirty data. And right now, what we have is just that command for you to flush the dirty data. You can imagine writing a thread that periodically goes and calls that function to implement the windows that you think about, if I'm understanding your idea correctly.
Okay, thank you.